The Diesel Podcast.
Developing innovation in English as a second or other language.
Episode 77, 23 tools for 2023.
Welcome to Diesel. This is episode 77. We are your hosts. I'm Brent Warner.
And I'm Ishelle Reyes.
Hey, we're a little late.
We're a little late, a little snotty, a little coffee, a little... Is coffee even a word?
It is.
C-O-G-H-Y.
Oh, C-O-U-G-H-Y. I thought you meant C-O-F-F-E-E.
Congested and...
Yeah, so you can hear a little bit of it in yours. Maybe there might be a tiny bit from me. Both of us were sick.
Pretty sick, man.
Over the holidays. And so if we had tried to record last week, I think it would have just sounded like one of those computerized vocalizers, just
yeah, my voice pitch would have matched yours.
it's been a slow, and it's one of those slow, annoying recoveries, right? Like,
yeah. Yep.
A pain in the butt. Okay. Anyways, everything else okay? How was the rest of everything your time else off?
Okay. I took a glorious, well, it was 2.5 weeks, but it just felt like a long time. glorious vacation in California, which was butt cold actually compared to Texas. I was surprised. Mm-hmm. But it was great to be back in the hometown and got to see my family, got to spend time with my nephews. It was just good to have absolutely nothing to do except for tell my nephew that he cannot tell me that he's about to fart in my face. So it's a 6-year old.
Always important.
Important. It's a 6-year old fascination.
Yeah, yeah.
How about you? Did you go anywhere?
No, my sickness took me over, and so I was sleeping through the new year and all that stuff. So
So happy new year.
Happy new year. 2023.
I know.
We're still in the 2020s. So worst of all decades, and we'll see how it goes. maybe it turns around on lucky number three.
Hey, it's year of the rabbit.
Yeah. So
I don't know what that means, but we're sure.
Gonna jump through it somehow. We're gonna jump on over. Hop on over. All right, so annual tradition at this point now, Ishelle, 23 tools for 2023.
I know. We started with like 19. We're up to 23.
Did we start at 19? Jeez.
I don't remember. Or 18. 20,
maybe. No, I don't.
I don't remember.
I don't think it's been that far. Okay, anyways, well, we'll take a look and we'll see how we are. But anyways, regardless, we are now at 23 for 23. So so every year we jump in, we take a look at some tools and these are not vetted by us. They're not, you know, anything necessarily. They're just things that we're possibly interested in looking at, might fit into our workflow, might not. And so it's just about sharing out a bunch of different possible things to examine and to see if it's going to work for us and for you. So so between the two of us, we've collected all of these. And
23.
Are you ready to jump in? Because
I'm ready to hop, skip, and tell you about good old DuckDuckGo browser. So we've mentioned it before. It's been around for a while, but it just keeps getting better and better. And I think with the latest happenings on Twitter and just in terms of security and safety online, particularly because the new generations don't know a world without being online and having that digital footprint even before they're actually born. It's really important to stay, keep up to date with safety. And DuckDuckGo recently introduced a Gmail automatic Gmail sign-in blocking feature. So where before it used to be so convenient to just have it, you know, log in with your Gmail account, but now we know that Google collects so much information. So now having the option of blocking those auto sign-ins would be a good, maybe a good way or something to consider if you're concerned about all that information. So DuckDuckGo, I have it on my It's one of my browser options.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, cool. So speaking of issues with safety and security out there around the net, I'm going to follow up. I'm kind of sneaking in a bunch here as a as my choice, all under one, and I'm going to call this all under the category of the Fediverse. So those of you who've seen all these problems going on with Twitter, you probably saw that there's a pretty large exodus over to Mastodon, and Ishel, we talked about that briefly before.
Right.
But the Fediverse also has all these other things. So they have one called Pixel Fed, which is like a Instagram equivalent, kind of. They have one called PeerTube, which is a YouTube equivalent. They have one called Write As, and that's like a writing, kind of a blogging version thing. And so anyways, all of these things are options for moving away from perhaps technocratically or megalomaniacally owned individual corporations. And the idea behind all of them is that you can either join an instance, so go join a group, a server that you're interested in, or you can go install your own. So it's a lot like the way that email works, right? We can all go on Gmail, or we can all go on Yahoo, or if we are so inclined, we can actually install an email client on our own servers, and then we can still communicate with everyone using them. So it's that same concept behind different types of social media, right? And so if I'm on Mastodon, and that's kind of the Twitter equivalent, then I can also see what people are doing over at a different Mastodon. If I'm following them, I can still be in contact and connect with other people, but it's, it is a, you know, run by the people, and there's no individual one person who can control or make all the rules. And so I will point out, it's been quite a bit of a learning curve, and it's definitely raw in the experience. Like, it feels like, you know,
you're new at everything.
Yeah. I mean, it really does feel like Twitter 10 years ago. And so it's like, okay, it's not always easy to communicate or as smooth as it has become on a lot of these major social media platforms. But on this other hand, it's yours. There's definitely a really, good vibe for the most part. There's a little bit in my experience, I don't know if you've experienced this, Ishel, but, there's a little bit of like the people who have been there for a while really want to maintain that culture and not let the Twitter culture kind of take over it as more people come in. But things change as more people come in and move, and that's how the world works. And so,
right. And I would just want to say that, if you're worried about, that leaving Twitter or shifting over would kill your teacher communities, I think that on Mastodon, that's one of the friendliest communities. It's there. It's in its emerging, developing stages. But again, as more people get comfortable with it and make the move, I think you're going to see that fullness of what it was. And it's new. It's going to be brand new, a new iteration of it. So
yeah,
open mind.
Yep. So all of those things, if you're interested in not being part of the, you know, if you're interested in having a different option for ways to communicate with people that you have a little bit more control over, you might want to check out the Fediverse.
All right. So moving on to all things AI. So Whisper AI is a pretty cool tool by OpenAI, but instead of giving you back responses, it functions sort of like a hearing aid. And what it's really cool about it is that it's able to listen to multiple accents and identify them.
Really?
And it also listens to jargon and is able to identify it, which is really cool because I know you and I have talked about, like, when are our jobs, our English jobs going to go away, right? Mm-hmm. Our English teaching jobs. And if you're able to learn from different accents, I mean, that's just, I haven't even begun to think of the possibilities, but I just think, oh my goodness, I constantly have to assess my students to see if the intelligibility level is where it needs to be in order for them to function in a world, or at least in a workplace where the people they're going to be working with aren't used to, speakers of other languages. That would just help so much. And I can see it ameliorating some of those the tension that happens from the frustration of being feeling like you're unable to communicate. And I think it could be I don't know. Again, it's in its beginning stages, but it's pretty cool in terms of communication and ease of communication. So whisper AI. Whisper. Okay. So, you're gonna make me cough.
Yeah, so that's the drinking game we should play. Is Ishel, you should stop muting yourself, and every time you cough,
you drink.
Yes, you being the kind listeners who are driving to work. okay, so speaking of AI and speaking vocal AI, mine also, the next one kind of falls along those lines, which is a tool called Speakable. It's at speakableapp.com. And basically what it does is it kind of lets you just put in words and phrases, and then it does an analysis of students' work. So I think definitely for pronunciation class, I could see where this would be valuable. I'm not sure how deep it goes, like how much you can have it do at a time. So is it going to let people talk for a long time or a little bit? But I think essentially what it seems to do is it analyzes people speaking. It lets them go in and do quiz type assignments, but with speaking instead of with like quizzes types of things. So they'll speak, it'll analyze your voice, and then you can make multiple choice questions back and forth out of them.
That's cool.
Yeah, there's kind of all these interesting little parts to it. And then
worth exploring.
And it can do grading inside of there for you. So I very interested to see how accurate this is, like if it's going to grade students in the same way as I would in terms of, you know, their ability to properly or closely pronounce, or maybe it would do it better. If it can do it equally as well or better, and it's all at the click of a button, that could be a real boon for students to be able to get quick turnaround and feedback. And so I am potentially interested to see how Speakable can work. It feels like there's some... It is emerging, I think. It feels like it's not perfect, or maybe it might go through different iterations in the future, but it seems like something that at least I want to play with and see what my students come up with, especially in my conversation class. And then there's a paid version that gives you like a dashboard and all this other stuff that kind of, you know, of course, as they do. So, but anyways, speakableapp.com.
All right. So along with the theme of AI, I have another option for AI created art. And this is called Starry AI, Starry as in like the Van Gogh Starry Night. Mm-hmm. And it's just another tool. It's an app, but another one to explore. I know there's a lot of controversy right now because we're exploring this new world, and it is going to impact artists of any type. It's going to redefine, I think, the way we view art, what we call art, et cetera. And that's just going to be a conversation. But I just thought it would be really cool for language learners to just say an old house in the middle of a desert. And then you get the image, and now you can use that as a prompt, as a writing prompt. So I would just use it as something to piggyback onto what I already use. And it's just another way of having writing prompts and getting, and I mean, there's, I imagine multiple ways that teachers will be able to find a use for this, but that is Starry AI. I just think it's fun.
That is cool. Yeah. This is not one of my, my choices, but also there's a, inside of Canva, canva.com, there's now a text to image generator as well, where you can type in a couple of words and it'll create a picture out of it as well. And so I've been, these kinds of things are showing up. Yeah.
That is, who would have thought a year ago, right?
Well, I love the idea because it's like, sometimes you go searching for something. You're like, there's nothing that really looks like this. And you're spending all this time searching. And you're like, I'm just going to type it up. And maybe it's not a perfect thing, but it's kind of close enough to what you're looking for. Mm-hmm. And so, there's a lot of really interesting, fun stuff I think you can do.
Very cool.
Yeah. All right. So I'm going to take mine back. My number six here is just Pear Deck. So...
Good old Pear Deck.
Good old Pear Deck.
They keep getting better, you know.
They really do, and that's kind of why I wanted to talk about it. So I watched Amanda Sandoval's presentation on the Ditch Summit over the winter break. So Matt Miller, who we've had on the show before, runs his Ditch Summit every winter and has a bunch of different people talking about, you know, tools and things you can implement into the classroom, which is great. And then he had Amanda Sandoval on, and we'll have links to her social media and stuff like that. She shares so much stuff on Twitter traditionally and everything else, but she has done all these super cool things with Pear Deck. And one of the things I did not really understand that existed. Check the grammar on that.
I didn't understand that existed.
Someone send me a message about what my grammar there was. you can do it, Ishelle. You can send me the message. It's
grammar Nazis.
Yeah.
I'm good.
I'm over it. So anyways, there's a thing I did not really realize inside of Pear Deck, which is one of the options for interaction. You know, they have the multiple choice or dragging little dots over things, is you can just embed outside resources as right into it. And so you can just go take a web page. So if you have a Quizzes or a Quizlet, you can put it right into your Pear Deck. Or if you have, if you have some sort of page on the internet that you want your students to read, you can just embed it right there. And so any interactive thing that is not actually part of Pear Deck can still be brought into Pear Deck through the www button. And so there's a lot of things that I want to play with there as well, to be able to just kind of have my students working through a clear guided process inside of Pear Deck. So that's like where the scaffolding is, but then you can take it out through these other means. And you can even, by the way, put in like a Google form in there on the side. So students are doing one side of things, reading about what you want them to do. And then they can go fill in the Google form to get your information about it as they're doing it. Right. So lots of cool things inside of Pear Deck, and I want to do more exploration and build more lessons out that my students can use in the future as well.
That is pretty cool. All right. So the next tool I have is something that is along the line of Quizzes and Edpuzzle, sort of. So it's called QuestGen AI, again, with the theme of AI. Mm-hmm. And what it'll do it is it'll take AI-generated prompts, and it'll give you quizzes based on it. So you could do your good old you could have critical thinking questions. You could have true or false, et cetera, et cetera. But I just think this is where we are. Again, it's a new thing. I don't know. I haven't used it, but I'm going to explore and see how well it takes information from AI, or something generated. And then again, find potential implications, good or bad.
Yeah.
But that's QuestGen AI.
QuestGen AI. Okay. So I'm going to follow up with one that's similar to that, I think, which is Conquer, Conker, which is from the Moat people. So as you know, I love Moat. It's a great, great tool. And so now they have this one called Conquer, Conker. And what I really like about Conquer is, I don't know if I really like it, actually. Sorry. I am learning. I just played with it once or twice. It is the same kind of idea. So you basically drop in a bunch of prompt into it. So you put in a reading passage, maybe 500 words or whatever it is. And I think it has a limit, but let's just say it's 500 words. And then it will create a quick multiple choice AI generated questions out of that. And I looked at it and it looked pretty, like I did a reading that I've done in my class a bunch of times, and I'm like, okay, it's all right. Like, they are of course surface level questions, right? So I would only use it for something that's like some very light formative work. I thought it was pretty good. And then the cool thing that you can do with it is you can click a button and it can convert it directly out into a Google form for you. So like, it creates the multiple choice questions. I think you might go in and edit it a little bit, and then you push a button and it's like, boom, here's a Google form. And then you can just instantly make it and then have the students work with it right away. Right. So I kind of like that. I definitely would hesitate to use it for serious summative quizzes, but for like, hey, let's see how we're doing. Let's see what we're understanding. Let's collectively look at how our class is doing with this reading. I could see some fun potential with it there.
Very cool. I like the way it's spelled too.
Yes, you and conquer, you know, like conking you on the head.
That's what it's a conquer.
Instead of
conquer.
Yeah. Conquering. Anyways, instead of C-O-N-Q-U-E-R, I guess. All right. So
love it.
Yeah, there we go.
All right. So the next tool is called SketchMeta. I think it's called SketchMeta Lab, but it's Sketch.Meta. And the reason why I chose this tool is because, again, I have a six-year-old nephew who's in kindergarten and he's learning to read, or like he's at the emerging stages of reading readiness. And one of the things that I've noticed is his generation doesn't know doesn't know what it's like to not have YouTube on. And so it took so much of my energy to get them off the YouTube or off TV and to have them do something else.
Let's get
that
your kid off the YouTubes.
Yep, I'm that person now. In my day. So SketchMeta takes drawings. And you add, I forgot what they're called, the little points. You can add the little movement points and it'll animate. It has different templates of animation that once you add in the little, you scan the image and you map the points out, it'll move, which I thought this is great because my six-year-old nephew loves cars right now. He's into cars and trains and he likes to draw cars and trains, and it would be really cool to animate his cars and then have him tell me a story that he can then try to write out. So I think this is great for many ages, but I particularly thought the younger grade levels, especially language learners, would be cool to see that their own drawing come to life.
Yeah, that is pretty cool. So like if you go on to the website here, it's actually pretty amazing because it's like you can have just kind of a semi sorry kids, but a semi crummy drawing or something.
You
right?
mean a rudimentary drawing?
Yeah,
hey man, I'm proud of my.
You can have a simplified drawing of stick figure, and you can show where the arms, where the legs are on it, and then it recognizes that and uses it as its movement tool. So that's actually, there's a lot of really cool potential with that.
And it's an introduction to art and how things are to movement, really. And if your language learners aren't there yet, that's just again an introductory tool that I just think it's great for conversation pieces as well, which we want our language learners to be speaking.
Nice cool. Okay, so one small one is the iPhone. It came out a while back, but it's still pretty cool. Is the iPhone stamp feature that removes backgrounds for you? So
not everybody knows about this. Not everybody.
Oh, okay. So if you don't know about this, basically you go onto a photo on your phone and you, I think you just long push on one person, right? Like, or whoever you're trying to focus on, and it will just remove the background and it'll turn it into a sticker that you can then go, you know, use in your messages. You can go drop them into your Google Docs or whatever else. And so, so there's some really cool ways, I think, that like, you know, teachers could probably do a couple of silly poses of themselves and like pointing at things and then just drop that picture right into a document or onto a slide or something like that. So some really easy ways for you to incorporate personalized pictures. And you could also take pictures of your own students and have them doing some of those things, right? And then put those into the slide decks throughout everything so people get excited to see their own themselves and which activity or assignment you might be connecting them with. So there's some really interesting and fun things that you could potentially do built right into your iPhone without any extra apps or anything like that either.
Yeah, I never thought about it in terms of adding stuff to worksheets. I've just been taking pictures of my nephew with boogers in his nose and sending him back to my sister.
Yours is a life full of boogers and farts, Michelle. So let's
the next tool is UPDF, and I know that I've given this a shout out It was one of my fun finds, but I just think not enough people know about it. Mm-hmm. And it's a free PDF maker, but it also edits PDFs, reads PDFs, annotates PDFs, converts PDFs, and it does all of this for free. It doesn't take up a lot of space, which has been the case with other PDF editing or annotating apps. Mm-hmm. And so for the person who doesn't like to download and sign up and then have to pay for something, this is just the bare bones, but it does so much. So I know I learned about it from Nick Peachy. So again, I just thought it deserved another shout out because I'm going to be using it quite a lot this year. I'm trying to transition into having this be my main PDF editor.
Oh, okay. Nice. So no more Cami for you.
I'm sorry, Cami. You don't have a phone app, so I do almost everything. Yes, you know, on my phone. Yeah,
it's a legit call. So okay. Mm-hmm. All right. And so next for me is this one called Roshi. You know, I guess fair claim. I did a little bit of consulting with Johnny, one of the lead developer of this, as he was trying to figure out what he wanted to build, and just some light conversations about what's useful and what's not. But this is a pretty cool. So it's Roshi, Roshi.ai, and of course more artificial intelligence stuff. It's pretty cool. But what this one does, it is partly based on some of the same AI languaging models that ChatGPT is using, I think. But what it does is it'll grab material that you provide it with. So any material online, and you click a button and it will do the whole simplification. So it's essentially like taking Newzella to anything that you want, right? So you provide the content, it will scan through it, it will simplify the language to the level that you're looking for it at. But then also the next things is that it turns it into a lesson. So it gives you like summaries of things. It'll give you vocabulary out of the words. It'll take, it'll generate questions out of things. And so it can do a ton of cool things. And a lot of those stuff that exist already in Newzella, but now you just convert it to, hey, this is the article that I want it to do it from, or here's the reading that I want it to do some work out of. And it looks pretty powerful from what I've seen that they've developed at this point, and they're really putting a lot of work and effort into it. So it's certainly something worth at least looking at to see if it's going to fit into your workflow. That's Roshi, Roshi.ai. Okay, quick break here. Ishel, you and I are both slightly available for consultation and training at institutions. So if you're interested in having one or both of us come over, please reach out to us. We can help you and your team develop some better ways to interact with your students, build some more creativity or opportunities for learning into your language learners' classrooms. And as I said, you can work with both or either of us depending on your needs and of course our availability. You know, both of us have a lot going on, so these are fairly limited, but please do feel free to reach out if you want to talk about details.
All right, so the next tool is called TeachFlix, kind of like Netflix. I don't know how long this has been around, and I have a feeling that I just missed it for whatever reason. Someone tweeted, I feel like they tweeted it out, and I was like, wait a minute, what is this? So TeachFlix is a platform that looks similar to Netflix, but it's free and it's got vetted content, video content. It's vetted by teachers. I think you would still be wise to vet it yourself, but you can type in the topic you want to watch and then the age group of the students you're going to be showing this to. And then you get multiple clips of things that are geared toward a classroom. So I think this is a really cool thing. I couldn't find it leads me to think that it's still not very widely known because there's not a lot of stuff on there. I don't know if that's also because of copyright issues or whatever, but I just think it's great to have that already because right now I'm using YouTube playlists, mm-hmm. and that's how I document my sources. But then I don't always want to use YouTube, especially with all of the ads that it's forcing you to sit through.
Right.
So TeachFlex.
Cool. So that sounds pretty good. My next one is Perusal. So this also is not new, but it's something that I can't remember if my colleagues are using it or if it's just heard of it around or whatever, but Perusal is Perusall. And basically, have we talked about this before? I honestly can't remember.
I don't think so. Some of these are new to me, yeah, unless I have a horrible memory, but I don't think
it's so well developed. I'm like, oh, this has got to be something we've talked about at some point in the past, but I just can't remember. So anyways, what it does is it kind of turns your reading assignments into like a social annotation opportunity for students. So, so it's all digital. It's kind of in the same way that I think that you would look at like a Google Doc, right? So you've got a Google mm-hmm. Doc and you can click on the plus button and then you can have a comment there on the side, and then students can even respond to those comments on your Google Docs, right? And I know some teachers do activities that way, not a lot, because sometimes it's like, oh, is it going to send through in the Canvas version, whatever, all these types of things. Mm-hmm. But the thing that I do like about it is that it creates a conversation built right into the app. And so it's like an e-reader. It's like socializing an e-reader, right? So you can highlight something. A student can then say, I don't really understand what this is saying. What does it mean? And then another student can come back and respond, and they get rewarded for communicating with each other. And then also, I guess it analyzes the quality of the responses too. So if they're just quick, like yes, no's, not so much. Whereas if they're kind of explanatory, like using AI to compare the question versus the answer versus what's in the thing, I think. And so it seems like there's like a lot of opportunity. And I was watching one of their promo videos and they're saying like with reading assignments, like I guess they're, and this is all in the video, so this is not me citing research, is that something like 30% of students do reading assignments, but when they start using this and interacting and it becomes a social experience for them, then it moves up all the way up to like 90% of the people will do the readings and the activities. And so I think that's some really interesting potential and ways to get students going, engaged, and then the teacher can create their own sets of questions on readings, and the students can also go in and build their own questions and conversation starters out of those as well. So I really like the different possibilities here. It can integrate with all sorts of different LMS platforms and, you know, different things like that. So it is one that I'm going to look into some more this semester. So Perusall, Perusall.com.
Cool. So talking about annotating, the next app, I feel like it was one of my fun finds, or I mentioned it before, but I think it, again, it's something that could be for those people who got brand new iPads for Christmas, and anyone, well, I had to replace mine.
You had to.
Mm-hmm. I had to. Mine broke. Anyway, GoodNotes. GoodNotes is a very free, again, kind of bare bones, rudimentary. I wouldn't call it rudimentary. It does what it needs to do for note taking, where other robust apps cost about $10, but this is a good one if you're trying to get trying to get used to writing with a stylus, and then also figuring out how to download as a PDF. And then if you really are spending a lot of time taking notes on your iPad, you can move on to a paid app. But GoodNotes is a good, I would say for language learners, I would probably say this is an easy, no sign up, download it. It's free. It does the job. You don't need to commit to anything, but I like it. I still use it. I've been using it over, Notability. And I love Notability, but yeah. GoodNotes is a good, quick, it's a good free version.
Okay. And just looking at this on the website as you're sharing it, it also says that any educational institution using Apple School Manager will have full access to GoodNotes, including handwriting recognition, for free. So the upgraded version is free. Ooh. If you're, I guess, an Apple school, or if you have,
yeah, like
if you
send out devices, I had no idea. Whatever.
So that's pretty cool.
That's pretty cool. Yeah,
that's a little bonus there too, possibly if that's your school. Mm-hmm. Cool. All right. So my next one is called Talk at Ease. Talk at Ease. And so you can find this at talkatease.com. And basically, it's an app that you can get on an Android or an iPhone, and it lets you have a conversation with it. Now, the language in here is a little strange because sometimes the language on the website seems to say you're going to have a conversation with a native speaker, and other times it seems to say that it's like a native speaker voice on artificial intelligence. And so I'm pretty sure it's the second one. Yeah, I don't think that they're able to accommodate this many actual native speakers to respond back and forth to you. But it does look pretty cool because it's like you'll get information, and then you'll be able to ask and answer it questions, kind of whatever type, different, tons of different types of conversations. It says 16,000 conversation pieces provide practice.
Wow.
And so they've got all these different things. It's not free. Well, there is a free version to get you started, but then it says like it's based all in euros, but €2.99 per month, or if you get 6 months, then it's for €12 total. So it's like a cup of coffee per month, or maybe something like that. Again, I'll play with it a little bit more, but it might be something for your students that is worth it for them to just be able to interact with every once in a while to try, like if they're prepping for a conversation that they know that they're going to have, right? Then they can kind of set themselves up for a few minutes and say like, okay, let me try and see what happens if I say this and that and how it will respond to me. So I like that idea of helping students kind of warm up for their conversations and giving more realistic responses back through this. So talkatease.com is maybe something that you can share with your students.
Pretty cool. So I'm going back to note taking. And again, I'm sure I've mentioned this before, but I think it's worth mentioning again, especially for teachers that may be overseas that don't have or anyone not working within a Google environment at their institution or where mine blocks it. So not everybody can use a Google Doc. But this is called Colla Note, C-O-L-L-A Note. Mm. And it is collaborative notes. So, and it's more for students who are taking notes on a digital device with a stylus. But you can link several, groups or whoever you're sending the link out to. And you can take notes on that, collaborative notes on a lecture, which is really cool because I know that when I've been using it, I've doodled a lot. And there's a lot of people who like to do sketchnoting. And I may be writing notes, like handwritten notes, but someone else is doing the same exact information on the same page, but as a diagram or as a some kind of illustration, which again enhances the my memory recall of that concept. So I think it would be really cool to have it with groups, to have groups taking notes and then sharing notes. So collaborative notes on mobile devices.
Does it work across? So it's not only iPhone.
I don't think you know what? I don't think it does it. I think right now it's only on Apple devices.
Okay.
I would have to check. Yeah. So for schools who are using it, I would love to see this across all devices.
Yeah. If it was platform like agnostic,
that'd be amazing. Yeah. But no, it's free. That's why I chose it. It's free. There's no sign up. And you just have to set clear guidelines depending on what age you're using to share this out to, but it's pretty cool.
All right. So the next one that I have up here is the Prime Machine, which is basically it's a corpus. So it's theprimemachine.net. And then you can get links to download it on the App Store, Google Play, Microsoft, whatever. You can go download it. It's an app, but it's pretty straightforward. It's a corpus app, but it's a little bit easier to use than some of the corpuses that are out there, corpi. Mark Machina is going to be able to tell us all about it.
yeah.
But anyways, so this is, I just kind of like it because it's a simplified version and it doesn't take very long to get into it or to figure out. I think a lot of the problem that I have had in the past with corpus, whatever corpus choice it is that sometimes they could be like, wait a second, how am I use, like, what's going on here? Is it kind of clear to see what's going on? They are by default not obviously the easiest because it's just tons of text being processed and presented to you. But it does seem pretty good. It starts off by, you know, you put in your word into it and it'll tell you like kind of all sorts of settings where it's being used. And they do the text to the left side and text to the right side of it. Then they, whatever word you put in, it'll show you the common collocations that you can use and how frequent the word is and all sorts of things like that. So I like it. It's just, it doesn't feel totally modern, but it still kind of gets, you know, students right to it if they really want to look at words and how they're being used properly, and maybe a little bit of an easier version and something that they can just have downloaded and put right on their computer. So the Prime Machine is an option for that.
Cool. So the next one I found is called Museo, which museo means museum in Spanish and probably Latin, I'm thinking. But it's a search engine of artworks. The search engine is still working to get different collections on it. So it right now it only has maybe about 5 or 6 different collections from different museums. And you can search a key term and then it'll pull every collection out. So you can, if you're looking for a picture of something or of an artwork, or you're looking to see what else is tied to that artwork, it'll pull up the piece and it'll give you the information. So kind of like an art dictionary, I guess, for museums. It's most of the images are already free to use because they're what do you call it? I don't know what they're called. I can't think right now. I have post-COVID brain.
Open access?
Yes, open access. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, we can always do the Google search, but then with Google search, you get multiple other things that are not related. So if you just want a quick, focused search and you're particularly looking for art, this is one.
Nice. Okay, cool. So my next one is Skriegel, S-C-R-E.
What's with all the funny names?
I know, it's the year of odd names, right? So, yeah.
You gotta stand out somehow.
Yeah, somehow. So Skriegel, this is a Mac only version. As far as I know, I think it is, but, I really, really like this tool. So basically what it does is if you're on Zoom or if you're doing screen recordings or whatever, you can activate this and it will clear your screen. So nothing shows up until you actively go and click on that thing. So like you can actually have your screen prepared with like, you know, 4 or 5 different apps or windows open, but until you select the one, the people viewing it on the other side cannot see it. So it just looks like a clean screen to them. So it's really cool if you're prepped, right? Like, and you're going to say, hey, I'm going to bring up this picture a little bit later. You can still have it right there open and ready to go on your desktop. And then I think you hit like Command-1 and then it'll pop up on the screen for people who are looking at it, right? And it's really cool, really interesting, a kind of a clean way to share the screen, especially if you're doing screen recordings or like I said, if you're teaching online, those are great. And then the other part that is wonderful is... this is a small developer. So I reached out with a couple of things that I was looking for and he responded. He's like, hey, let me check into it. And mm-hmm. he built both of the things that I asked him to build right into it. So,
that is so cool.
Yeah. So one thing I said, it was like, hey, I'd like to have these windows be able to be highlighted in different colors so that like if I'm talking to my students, I can say, look at the green window, look at the yellow mm-hmm. window, whatever it is. Right. So he built that in. And then he also built in an option to crop share. So if I only want to show a section of a window that I'm looking at, so let's say I've got something up on USA Today and there's a bunch of ads on the right hand side that I don't really want like all those ads showing up, I can just highlight in on the section of the text that I want to be able to show. And he built it in so that we can actually just crop out and show sections of work as well. So if you're doing any kind of screen sharing or screen recording and you want a cleaner option prefer things, Skreegle is really wonderful. And that's at appblit.com. And Skreegle is the name. He's got several different apps, but Skreegle is this one.
Pretty cool. All right. So this is a truly new app for 2023. It was only created about 5 or so days ago.
Wow.
And it's following on the toes of ChatGPT and all the implications of what this means for writing classes and plagiarism. And unfortunately, right now, as of today, the beta is down because they got so much web traffic that right now it's on a sign-in basis to let you know when the beta is up. But this is called GPT-0, and it was developed by a student who wanted educators to have another tool to figure out if any written work has been done by ChatGPT type tools.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. And so it will go through multiple, I want to say algorithms or some kind of formula that detects how there's two. If you go to the website, the GPT-0 website, the guy who created this walks you through the different points that it measures and what the likelihood of that being not a real human is.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay.
And so he said he got a lot of backlash from students, of course, but a lot of praise from teachers. But what he said is that he would like, you know, it helps you to become a better writer, because if you are using information from a non-human source, you want to see how close you can get to the human element of that, I guess. And so I just think it's, again, something that we had not thought of before. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I would liken it to the Turnitin 2.0 of AI.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's going to be something huge. And I don't think it's going to be the first one. I think there will be others, and eventually someone will purchase it. And again, Turnitin 2.0, GPT-0. So if you're interested in it, you can type in your email to get the latest news when it's back up. But right now it's just free to use. Eventually I feel like someone's going to buy it out and schools will be using something like this.
Yeah. I just signed up for it just to see what it's like. So that's super cool. Okay. Great. So my last one, this one is completely non-tech. It's good.
What do you have?
Yeah, good old fashioned paper notes.
Holy crap.
I know. So right now I've got the field notes, you know, like you can get these little field notes type of things out there in the world. And then what I got for Christmas, this is actually what I asked for, is this little space pen, like a mini half size pen that when you take off the cap, it becomes almost full size so that you can write with it. But it's like one of these long lasting ultra, like designed for outer space types of pens.
How pricey was that?
I think it was like $30, $25 or $30 or something like
okay.
that. Like it's a pretty nice pen.
No, that's pretty good pen. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's supposed to last, it's refillable, you know, but like supposedly right. like you can do the upside down writing, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
All of this was just because I watched this video on this guy who kind of did this thing, and he's like, oh, you know, instead of just relying on the phone, like I'm separating myself from the phone. As you guys know, I'm kind of like trying to eliminate a lot of the phone usage of stuff. And so I like the idea of still having a place to take notes and just to think separately. And when you're on your phone, of course, you're just distracted by all the other things. So even if you're taking notes on your phone, and this is no criticism of your app, your notes app, from before, those are great, but like just for yourself, right? And I'm like, well, what about the good old fashioned process of having just a pen and a piece of paper and just sitting and being able to carry it around with you? So I can stick that notepad in my back pocket. I can stick the pen with me in my pocket and go anywhere and be able to write ideas, lesson plans. A lot of the times I'll get struck with like good ideas for lesson plans and things, but I tend not to put them into my phone or tend not to just kind of go like, oh, I'll think about it later. But I like the idea of having a written record. And then when you write it, you're turning your brain into activation mode to think about it some more and see how it's going to work and process through. So, I'm trying this out to kind of support my own thinking through through the next year and see how well it goes. It's just an experiment. I might use it more or less than I thought, but it's worth trying out.
You know, Brent, I recently purchased a 5-pack mini notebook. They're just tiny, like composition books, but I really want their adventure. I'm a big fan of Adventure Time. So they have like the Adventure Time a logo of little illustrations. And I've been carrying them in my purse and in my backpack, and it's what I pull out. I do not, as much as I do a lot of stuff on my phone, I hate taking notes on my phone. I hate the note apps. The notes app is for grocery stores or things that I, you know, certain things, but I do not like taking notes on there. And I found that I'm horrible with handwriting now. And I just, because I'm just so not using my own writing, and it just takes a lot more effort. And I found like, oh, what am I writing again? So, yeah, I became a little bit concerned because I like writing and I like using pens and I like the physical aspect of writing. So I am with you on that. It's important not to forget that there are perfectly good ways of taking notes. So, so last but not least, the 23rd app. Are you still listening out there?
Nope, they're all gone, but that's okay. I'm here. Don't worry.
I've been more concerned about privacy and about digital footprints, and not that I have anything to worry about, but for new generations, it's just harder to discern what to put online and what not to put online. And I have seen just, you know, with the transition of power that Twitter has now was where it is. I started thinking about just cleaning up my tweets, and most of my tweets are probably just educational related or Adventure Time related or silly post related. But I just thought, you know, I would not, if I were to leave Twitter, I would not want to leave a trail behind. Who knows? Anyway, so I started looking into apps that clean out. I mean, you could close your account, but your tweets might. I don't trust the mollusk. So Tweet Delete is an app, no sign up required. It erases in a batch about 3,200 tweets. And once they're gone, they're gone. So I don't really have anything that I wanted to keep. I usually bookmark everything or I switch it over to Wakelet if it's a tool. But at this point, it's like, no, it's also a good thing to let go. But just gotta let go. Some things are just not meant to be on the internet forever. And right now I feel like there's just so much to worry about. So Tweet Delete is one. There are many, but this is one that I thought, oh, I don't want to sign up for things. I just want to delete in batches. And so I cleaned out everything. And I think I only have the last 600, the most recent 600 tweets available.
Yeah.
So
I've seen a couple people that I follow, and they auto delete every tweet that's like older than a week or something like that. So there's all sorts of different approaches to these things,
I used to do that. Go ahead.
No, sorry. I'm just saying it's a good thing. Like, hey, you don't have to, like, not every person has to follow in the same way as the system designs it for, right? Like, hey, this is how I want to use it. And I just want these ideas to exist for a certain amount of time. If someone wants to screenshot them, that's fine. But if not, then that's fine too. They'll be gone. And it's just interesting to see that, like, hey, people are figuring out different ways to approach these technologies. So yeah,
just we're more interested in safety and safeguarding our personal information, especially when it's in the hands of someone who may not really care about where it goes. So, or may stand to profit from. Anyway,
who could that be?
All right, it is time for our fun finds. And this time around, I have a no-bake Ferrero Rocher cheesecake that I found on Instagram.
You got a cheesecake from Instagram?
I saw the recipe on Instagram.
Oh, okay.
And it's by Break or Bake. That's the user.
Oh, so you made this thing.
Yeah, I made this.
I thought it was something that you bought at a store.
Oh, okay. No. Like the part where it said no bake, I was like, yes. And then, you know, she was talking about how you tend to get a lot of Ferrero Rocher boxes or little gifts during the holidays more than you want to consume.
It does happen, yeah.
Yeah, so this inspired a cake, a cheesecake, and I'm not really a big cheesecake fan, but this just looked tasty, and the fact that it's chocolate and it's no bake, and I still have to perfect my method, but it came out delicious, and it's one of the few things I can take. Maybe it's delicious because I can't really taste.
I swear it's really good, you guys. It's delicious. What does it taste like? I don't know.
But yeah, it's one of the few things I've been able to enjoy post-COVID. So no nice. Bake for a Rocher cheesecake.
Cool. So mine is a book. It's called Fall or Dodge in Hell by Neal Stephenson. do you know Neal Stephenson, Michelle?
I don't think so.
He's like the guy who came up with the term the metaverse and all this stuff. So he's like, okay. He does this like very long form, kind of predictive science fiction stuff.
Anyways, science fiction. That's probably why.
This is kind of dystopian science fiction, kind of. It's super interesting. Anyways, so this is a guy. I mean, he came up with this idea of the metaverse, right? And so this is where like Zuckerberg and all these Silicon Valley people are stealing their ideas from incorporating it, turning it in, right? But anyway, so this book is super interesting because basically I can't spend too long getting into the whole concept of it, but basically a very wealthy game designer dies, but in his will he says like he wants to be cryogenically frozen. And then the kind of the outcomes of that are that like the technology had changed between the time he signed that and the time that he actually died. And so there's like all these ethical questions about whether or not he actually should be preserved or shouldn't be preserved, because it's not about reviving the brain. It's about scanning it and then putting it into a computer and then having those computer programs become, the new person back to life. Right. But now then it starts getting into him. It goes in two sides. So one in the real world and then the one on the art in the built-in computer world where his brain scans now exists and he starts to develop a consciousness slowly. It's a massive book. It's like 900 pages, but he slowly starts to develop this consciousness, and like it's really interesting because it's all about like how he's developing a world because he's a game designer, but he doesn't really know that he was a game designer and he was also a person, and like what does it look like to build a world out of nothing, not even realizing that you used to be a person, right? But also all of these really interesting things about what technology is going to look like in the real world, the death of passwords, but like who's controlling technology and all. It's like super fascinating and very in-depth, all these different crazy ideas that really have just sparked my imagination on like what's the future going to actually look like when we start seeing these things and how people are incorporating or not incorporating. They made these jokes about how it's like, oh, it was cute in old movies how people used to say, oh, I'm going to get on the internet and these are the smart people that are going to figure things out, right? As compared to just being a part of the internet all the time, right? And so it is like breathing. It's like you don't think of it as a separate thing. And so,
wow.
Anyways, this book is pretty in-depth. And
so you finished all 900 pages?
No, I'm about halfway through right now. Cool. And so it's pretty powerful. If you want a massive book, if you have an Audible subscription and you're looking for something that's going to get you some value out of it, it is huge. So Fall or Dodge in Hell by Neal Stephenson.
All right. As always, if you're giving us a shout out anyway, tag us on social media. We're mostly, we're on all the platforms for now.
We exist there.
We exist.
We're not very active about posting, but we do exist.
We're findable.
Yeah, we're still making the show. It's just, it's hard for us to get out. okay. And show notes and other episodes at diesel.org/77, the number 77. Or of course you can listen to us at Voice Ed Canada. That's VOICED.CA. Yeah, social medias. So still all the trash we're talking, we're kind of there. Twitter, the show is at DieselPod. I am at Brent G. Warner.
And I'm still at Ixie_Pixie. Pixie.
Yeah. Oh, and I'm also just going to say, because I talked about the Fediverse, I'm also on Mastodon at Brent G. Warner at mstdn.social.
I'm somewhere in Mastodon too. I haven't memorized my. Yeah, they'll find. All right. In Latvian, thank you, is Paldies. Paldies for tuning in to the Diesel Podcast.
Thanks, everybody. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Happy New Year.